We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Felt like, well, man, this team's it's title or bust lately. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm saying is, like, this just goes to show you that you can get a lot of enjoyment and you can get all the highs and lows, even though the team might not win it all. And I kind of just think that's where we're at with the Warriors. I mean, this is turning into it's turning into a fun year. And it's making you ask some questions like, huh, could they really do something special? And maybe special would just be knock off a high seed in the playoffs. But let me tell you something. If they were to do that, and I'm still not convinced they can, but if they were to knock off a Utah or Phoenix, no, it's not going to be a championship. But it's going to go down in Warriors lore. And it's going to go on Steph Curry's resume. And it's going to be important.
Yeah. What if he had his own personal We Believe to add to three chips? I mean, already he's incredible. Unrequited as the greatest player in franchise history, but if he could get that double legacy goo, if they, let's say they're the seven, you knock off LeBron in the play-in, which, by the way, that would be special. A Warrior win over the Lakers in the postseason is automatically special. So you do that, and then you go out there and you take it to Utah again as Rudy go there in the corner. Watches offensively the entire series, and you knock Utah off, and then you go into a series. You know, the seven beats the two, so then you play the three, go up against Kawhi and the Clippers, and maybe take them to six or seven games, but fall. This becomes a special year then.
Right. Yeah, and let's put the rat on the table, Steiny. When this season
third
started,
rat, goo.
It wasn't about the team aspect. It was about, let's be real, can Steph, what is he? What's he got left? So not only has he answered that from an individual perspective, now the team is about to embark in the ins and then hopefully the offs. And I'll say this, I'm starting to get the feeling, tell me if I'm wrong, no excuses, are the Warriors as a team, Steiny and Dibs, playing with house money? Like the fact that they get to the ins, then get to the offs, nobody's expecting, I'm hoping, but if they get to the offs, like you said, Steiny, and you look back on everything that's gone on this season, you know what? That was a pretty damn good year, and I know we had our guy, your guy Dave from Utah on. He said the 403 season or 15-16 was the best season for Curry. I still put this up there right there, Dibs and Steiny. I just get a sense of house money amongst fans for what we've already got the answers to, that Steph at 33 may still be the best player in the league.
I think I think they're playing with house money if and when they get into the playoffs. I think if they were to somehow stub their toe in the play-in and not make the playoffs, it would wipe away a lot of the good stuff that happened. But they're on their way. They're on their way, which is good. By the way, you know what kind of didn't add up for me? I don't know if you guys remember, we had David Locke on yesterday, the radio voice of the Jazz, and he was talking about defensive players, and he's like, you know, you look at the Jazz, and it's only Rudy Gobert who's a really good defender. And remember, I said, what about Royce O'Neal? And he said, nah, he's okay. Like, he's all right. He's average. And I'm watching that game last night thinking, geez, the standards in Utah for defense must be ridiculously high. I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, but when you think about Utah from a greater perspective, the people of Utah, no one's been shutting things down like those people in Utah for the better part of five generations now. So you got to be more than just a sturdy backcourt defender to be considered one who shuts things down in the great state of Utah.
Yeah, that's true.
It's prescient. It's astute. It's astounding when you think about it from a cultural standpoint. The team has always mirrored the people of the Great Salt Lake, but when you think about it from a shutdown standpoint, of course they lock you up in the half court. They shut you off at 9. You can't. Wow. Occupy movement, Goo, when it was Occupy this and Occupy.
Oh, I do.
I went to Salt Lake with the San Jose Sabercats, touchdown Sabercats. Bob Fitzgerald used to work for them as well, so Fitz knows. I went by Occupy Salt Lake. It was 5 people in 2 tents peacefully sitting there, prayer books open. And I thought, I've never been less intimidated in all my life.
How lucky is law enforcement in Utah, Daddy? Man.
Anyway. Yeah.
Let me tell you something about Salt Lake City. And I know you might not believe me, but having been there at least twice a year for 10 years, it's got a seedy underbelly to it. You just got to go looking for it, which unfortunately I would at times. But Salt Lake City and Portland, man, you get on the edges there, and it gets a little dicey, Goo.
Okay.
It gets a little dicey.
Yeah, I'm out. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Utah may be the first round opponent for the Warriors. We'll see. Maybe the Phoenix Suns. I'll tell you what, Warriors play the Suns tonight. It kind of feels like, that's right, they play another big game tonight. I wonder if they're going to, and I've always thought this is kind of strange, even though it's just part of the NBA. You know, the Warriors are playing last night against the Jazz, and they're in a tight ball game, and they're busting hump, and the Suns are sitting somewhere in a hotel in San Francisco, laying around on their beds, probably watching the game. You know what I mean? I always just kind of think about that now that the Warriors have to play a back-to-back tonight and what it may mean.
Well, it only means something if Memphis runs the table, because you've got 3 games left of the regular season. As long as you win one of the next 2, and even then, if you go in 36-35 and Memphis is 37-34, which would mean Memphis would win 2 of their 3. Still, it comes down to that game. The only way it burns you is if you lose these next 2 and Memphis wins its next 3, therefore giving them a 2-game edge over you with 1 to go.
Memphis hosting Dallas tonight. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a game.
So, Stani, I would argue that tonight's game is the least important of the next 3. Pending what Memphis does, because you need to beat the Pelicans, and you absolutely need to beat Memphis tonight's. I wouldn't
That's
call it a throwaway, but tonight's one that, having gotten last night, tonight you're not sweating it. It's Hakuna Matata.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that, because if the Warriors lose tonight, Memphis wins, then they're a half game back. All they have to do is win one of the next 2 to guarantee that the Memphis game will essentially for all the marbles.
Purposeful. Right.
But if you get tonight, you feel like, you know what, we're hot. Not just we feel that way. We have a winning streak going into that Memphis game. There you go.
Well, and you win tonight, and you increase your chances a little bit that maybe you're 2 up on Memphis if they stub their toe against the Kings. I think they have the Kings twice. I don't know that the Warriors are going to count on that, but 3 games left in the regular season, and the Golden State Warriors have really brought some excitement into the play-in, and ideally for them, the play-offs, as we call them, the ins and the offs. When we come back, we're going to have Kalen Azubuike joining us at 12:30. He was on that We Believe team, and he was a Golden State Warrior when, as Bob Fitzgerald put it, Baron Davis dunked on Andre Kirilenko's flat top. And we'll talk to him about it on the other side on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Steiny, Guru, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
And we forgot to ask Fitz about the shot. What was last night? Where did somebody
Raymond
shoot from?
Flies in for the rebound.
Wiggins made that tough again.
Steph, he just shot that from Fairfax.
Fairfax, but that was the game before, I thought. Right?
Completely slipped my mind in the midst of the barren love, the We Believe, the 14-year anniversary, the Steph shot, the victory, actual basketball talk. We'll get back to it because I know you're listening, Bob, and just know that I shed one singular tear over that. I appreciate it, as do all of us who call Fairfax home.
And Steiner, you don't want to have your hand out every time he comes on. You know, you want to let a week go by and then, you know, double back maybe next time.
That's although a good
Fitz made it clear early in our shows that he's got a lot of handouts to give. Fitz, I believe, did he make a reference to his money?
Oh,
yeah.
Look at my boys.
Let me throw this one at you guys. If you're going, let's say you're in the play-in game next week against the Lakers, and it's the last 5 minutes of the game, and it's tied. Who's the fifth player you want on the floor? And I'm assuming you're going to want Curry, Wiggins, Green, and Looney. If those are your four, who's the fifth on that team, Goo? And this is kind of where I say I don't want it to be Oubre.
I get that, and as much as I love Poole, I'm going with Bazemore. I'm going with Baze. I'm going with not Russell Baze, but Kenneth Bazemore.
Oh, nice.
I just think
if he had
on
the
a
wins
good
of
day,
Russell Baze, he'd be a happy man.
Shout out Bay Meadows. But he's got the wherewithal, man. He knows what he's doing, and the most important thing is he's a compliment to Steph, and I just feel like he feeds off of their relationship, but – the second part, he's not scared. He'll take that shot. Even if it ain't his shot, he'll take it. So that scares me a bit, but it's Bazemore.
Yeah, foul alert, major foul alert. But unfortunately, you don't have a lot of other better options. You know, do you want the quick trigger shooting of Jordan Poole? Not in the last 5 minutes. I want that in the second quarter, and I need it early in the fourth quarter, but late nut crunching time, as we like to say. I'm with you, Goo. It's got to be Bazemore. And he's been better at fouling, but they fouled that up last night, up 18. And I use the F word purposefully because they kept putting Utah to the foul line.
Yeah, that's the worst thing you can do with a lead because it stops the clock and they score without time moving. I can't believe I'm going to say this. Obviously, the easy answer would be, well, it depends on what the matchups are. Did you want Toscano Anderson? I don't know. There's something. I know he's undersized at times, and I know, he should be wearing flashing red lights because he's a hazard, and you never know what he's going to. But boy, I kind of like him late in a game. He's not afraid of the moment either.
I like you putting him in Caltrans orange right now because there's an absolute. He's going to respond to an incident, too. And if there's 11 seconds left, let's say last night, Gobert on the miss from Steph almost gets the rebound, juggles it, and it kind of falls near Gobert's feet. Well, I like JTA in that moment being the first one to go head first into the pile while simultaneously calling timeout. So maybe that's ultimately the guy you need in that spot.
I agree.
It's scary to think about the similarities between him and a young Draymond. I mean, Steiny, I mean, he can hit the three. I mean, he can run. He can block shots. He can jump. I mean, he can do it all. You know, he ain't a superstar, but he definitely belongs in this league. And I just get Dibs young Draymond Green vibes that when he shot 38% from three, I just – dudes found a spot. They found a gym, man. This is no fluke.
I think it's closer to young Matt Barnes, honestly. The same
because like
Matt Barnes, neither Barnes nor JTA, I think, would say, "Oh, I was a big time threat off the dribble." Both incredible glue guys and good shooters when they're spotting up, Steiny. And I think also both versatile defenders can guard, you know, 2 through 5, primarily 3 through 5, but undersized guys who could be feisty in the front court. That to me. If you said to Juan Toscano-Anderson right now, hey, JTA, you're going to have Matt Barnes' career. What do you think? Yes.
Right.
I think he takes that.
That
in
was
heartbeat.
Brought to him. Yeah, that was brought to him, Steiny, and he took it as the ultimate compliment. Like, you know, if I could bring what Barnes, you know, has done in this league, like he knew what Matt represents. And I remember Shasky going down that road when I was trying to make a comparison to Draymond. He brought up Barnes, but that is a good comp.
The other thing about Barnes is there was a time early in his career when he was not an NBA player. I mean, he was struggling to kind of latch on, and he just worked and worked and worked on his shot, his three-point shot, and he got good enough where he was able to stay in the league. I mean, I'm looking at Barnes right now. He shot 15% his first year from three, 22% his second year, 20% his third year.
Oh.
And then as a Warrior in 06-07 in 76 games, he shot 36.6%. So I remember back then the story was that he just that's the only thing he worked on was his three-point shot, and then he started making enough of them where the other parts of his game could fit into.
Probably hard to work on taking charges and work on diving over the scorer's table for loose balls and, you know, and playing physically against guys in the post. Easier to work on your shot, but that's great that he did that. And in this day and age, Goo, you absolutely have to. And I'm sure when Matt Barnes was shooting those terrible percentages, he was shooting one or maybe one and a half threes a game. Whereas now, if JTA is a real rotation player in our league, his advantage would be to have a stroke and shoot maybe five threes a game.
Love it. And I got to be honest.
Real quick, just to back Dibbs' point up, he's absolutely right. First year, 13 threes. Second year, 22 threes. Third year, 15 threes. Then he came to the Warriors and shot 290. Now, a lot of that was a function of he was getting to play a lot more. But
And Nelly, too, right?
No doubt. Absolutely.
That's Nelly crazy.
You are a product of your environment. But Fitz talking about, you know, we're in this microwave society. And, you know, I want to ask you, Steiny and Dibbs, do you think any differently now of Pascal? Are we being too hard on him? And now that you cite Matt Barnes and what he ended up being and what he wasn't early on, maybe we are too quick to judge these youngsters.
Yeah. Not judging
Kelly
Pascal.
Kelly Oubre's a youngster, technically. Yeah, you could give me how many years he's been in the league. He ain't even 25.
But he's got frequent flyer miles that would indicate to me that he's more experienced than your average 25-year-old. I mean, he's going to be coming up on his fourth team, wherever that next team is. He's no Ish Smith, who's one team away from tying the record, as we learned earlier in this very program, 11 teams as a 32-year-old. But he's got some mileage on him. For Pascal, for me, his season gets an incomplete. Yeah. And if you gave it a grade, it would be a D. But he was able to drop the class before that last midterm.
Nice.
And so he got a good old-fashioned incomplete.
Doesn't go on your transcripts. Yeah.
No, I got more I's, U's, and W's than I do A's and B's in my transcript. My transcript is like a game of Wheel of Fortune, for God's sakes.
I'll never forget, man. My dad was like, What's this W mean? I was like, winner, pops. The W stands for winner. Yeah.
The U is worse with the unauthorized withdrawal.
No.
Totally.
I was the master of knowing the precise course to take, pass, no pass.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys had that in college, but we could take, a course a semester, just pass or no pass.
My son's doing that at Berkeley now.
He
chose wisely, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of wisely, James Wiseman. The one thing I'm thinking about, and see, this is where just to get back to, you know, Fitz, we want instant gratification. We're not going to get that with Wiseman. And I'm just wondering about, I'm thinking about the Warriors team. Could they be where they are right now had he not gotten hurt? And you think about the way they're playing right now and how it almost would have been incompatible to play the way they're playing now and try to develop Wiseman at the same time. The guy's obviously going to be a part of the future, but I don't know. Maybe there's a silver lining to this injury, which is allowing the Warriors to be more competitive now than they would have been had they had to give him 25 minutes a night.
What if I told you Dibbs and Steiny, hell yes, they would have been right where they're at now, because the greatness of Steph wouldn't have been offset by what Wiseman brought to the table. He would have been along for the ride. He would have been better, you know, even working through the kinks. But Dibbs, I never once saw him Wiseman, that is, and blamed any loss on just the minutes. If he was starting, if he was coming off the bench, we saw him not even finishing games. I don't know if that would have been, you know, the scenario now, but I got to honestly believe where Steph is now and how great he's been, Wiseman wouldn't have negatively impacted that.
He absolutely would have, and the numbers were showing you that he did, in fact, negatively impact you. And the fact that you've won 12 of the last 17 that coincides with his absence, it's not pure coincidence. And it's not sustainable long-term to only play eight guys, but there's been a reason why you've played so well of late, the cohesion of this unit. And James Wiseman was not capable enough on either end of the floor to do anything yet at this level other than be catered to. And when you have a Steph Curry offense, everything needs to be catered, and not catered to, but geared toward Steph Curry. And James Wiseman's current skill set does not match up with that sort of catering.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
I agree with you, Dibs.
Someday it will. Someday there'll be, you know, he'll be able to be a guy initiating with the ball in his hands and mid-range and all that, but we're just not there right now. And how could you be with a guy who's just 20 years old?
Go ahead, Stoddy.
We got Kalena. Kalena. Let's jump in. Talk to Kalena Azubuike. You can hear him on Warrior Telecast on NBC Sports Bay Area, along with Bob Fitzgerald. The next time you can hear him is tonight, 7 o'clock, Phoenix in town against the Golden State Warriors. Kalena, thanks so much for joining us, especially on the spur of the moment. Let me just do this. Can we play the highlight for Kalena? And I'm just going to ask you what you were thinking at the time and what you remember about this following moment, Kalena.
Monte Ellis is at the scorer's table. Barron likely done.
By the way, Boozer shot 56% this year.
Oh, Barron shouts it down on Kirilenko's head. Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me with the right-hand spike? Do you believe now?
What do you remember about that, buddy?
I was in awe. I was in shock. I jumped up just like everybody else on the bench, and I just remember Barron was maybe a little irritated that he had to come back in the game. I believe we were up, and we had a pretty nice lead, and the Jazz started kind of making a little push, and Coach Don Nelson looks down the bench and signals to Barron to get back in there and win this thing again for us or finish this thing out for us. And Barron seemed like he was maybe a tiny bit irritated to go back in there and have to do it again because he'd already been killing the whole game and had done his job. So he came back in there. I think he'd hit a crazy shot off the glass before that, just doing what Barron does, just being a problem out there. And he got the step, and you see him gather, and Kirilenko is Mr. Defense, takes a lot of pride in being able to block shots, and he just bodied him, met him in the air, and Barron just leaned in on him and just dunked it so hard, got up so high, first of all, which we remember Barron from the Charlotte Hornets days and his time there, just being able to posterize people almost at will, and he's got crazy mouths, but he hadn't done that in a while, not like that. And so when he did that, we just all went crazy, and we were at his house afterwards, and they were playing it on ESPN. He was every other play of the top 10 plays, and he was watching it in shock, kind of like we were. I looked at his face. He was like, man, was that me? Did I really do that? He even said that. I was like, did I really just do that? And so he was pretty impressed with himself, as he should have been. And then afterwards, the best celebration, I think, of all time, just flesh out, stomach showing. And he's just like, yeah, this I came back in here, I conquered again, and now I'm done. He could have just walked off the court after that, and that would have been perfect. That's probably what they would have done in New York in the streets playing on the playground, whatever. Just let him walk off. The game's over. Let's just all go home.
Kalina, I got to ask you, man, the world, you know, we know how it played out, and you guys shocked the world. You got hot at the end of the season just to qualify for the offs, but can you share with us your guys' mindset? Because to me, I hear stories about just how confident that group was to go out and face that Maverick team.
we were super confident because we had had so much success against them in the regular season, and Coach Don Nelson knew them like the back of his hand, and he had a strategy and a scheme that he knew was going to work because we had done it some in the regular season, but we hadn't deployed it all the way like we were going to in that first series against them. And so we came out and we really made it tough on Dirk Nowitzki, and he would drive one way and we would send Barron and another guard to double team him and have those have him come from Nowitzki's blind side. And we got a bunch of steals that way or just bothered him, and our defense was incredible. But then on the offensive side, we got up and down, we played together, we were moving bodies, we were knocking down threes, we were cutting, we were driving, we just were super confident against them, and we were playing really well as a team. And I think it really showed in that series what our potential was and how much fun we were having playing the way we were, the run and gun, the small ball, all that, the versatility that Coach Don Nelson loves. He had the right personnel to deploy that, and we did a good job of executing his defensive game plan, executing his strategy, and it was a lot of fun to watch. Honestly, I didn't get to play a ton that series. I got some minutes kind of when it was the games were pretty much done and it was garbage time. I got in there and I think I scored a couple times, but I had so much fun watching those guys, cheering those guys on, and just watching the way they played together. And honestly, I really felt like we should have won the next series against Utah if we were able to close and knock down some free throws and keep our cool and on and on and on. But that was the loudest I've ever heard Oracle. It was just deafening, and you could hear the hunger and just the passion. And it was really a fun time to be on the team, and I'm sure it was a fun time to be a Warrior fan.
Incredible times, incredible memories with Clint Azubuike here on 95.7 The Game. 14 years forward, minus a day, last night at Chase Center. Chase trying to find its culture, its identity. Steph Curry with a second chance three to rescue one from the trash bin, Kalena. What'd you think of last night's wild one against Utah?
It was amazing. I thought the Warriors really played well defensively. They executed the defensive game plan. They knew that Utah was a great three-point shooting team, and they were going to shoot a ton of them. They shoot over 43 times a game. And so the Warriors were thinking about just flying around defensively and really trying to clog up the paint and then close out as hard as they could, or X out or switch out as hard as they could to contest threes, and they did a great job. And Utah really had a tough time, and then Jordan Clarkson happened, and he was on fire. The guy had been missing crazy tough shots the whole game, but he was scoring. His percentage wasn't great. He was a volume shooter the whole game, but the threes weren't going the whole game, and then he gets the drive by Bazemore. First of all, Bazemore gambled and gave him the advantage, and he was able to draw an and one. He did that back to back. He's got another and one. That three ball was just a tough shot. That was great defense from Bazemore on his three ball that he hit late there, which was a shot that he hadn't made all game, but then he was getting hot later in the game and had knocked down a couple threes, I think, before that, where he got crazy elevation on the three ball, and Utah was able to take the lead. But the Warriors kept their poise. Even though Steph had that one turnover, he didn't seem frazzled by it. And no one got frustrated. They just continued to play and kept their composure, and they showed a lot there. They showed a lot of maturity there to, besides that turnover, just keep making plays and keep thinking the game. And Draymond never got annoyed or anything. He just, late in that game, he just kept under control. After the offensive rebound, you know who they're going to. They're going to Steph again, even though you just missed one. And Draymond's going to find him. And Steph talked about that, the rapport that they have. Draymond knew he was going to throw that little juke move, fake like he's coming off of him, maybe a handoff, and then go the other way. And Draymond put the pass right on the money, and Steph was able to step into that in rhythm. Yep. And knock it down. He's just cold-blooded, and he doesn't care how many threes he misses the whole game. He still thinks that next one's going to go in. He definitely thinks a game winner is going to go in. So he's their closer. But it was a really gutsy team effort all the way around. Other guys stepped up. Bazemore played well offensively. Jordan Poole had some nice minutes when he came in. I thought Looney set some really great screens. Even though Andrew Wiggins didn't have an amazing scoring game, especially to start, he kind of worked himself into the game. He did a lot of great things defensively. He was really good defensively. So everybody kind of had a part to play, and that's what you need in a game like that. So now tonight's kind of a free swing against Phoenix, but it's just a big-time win, and they should be proud of themselves for that.
Colin Azubuike joining us on 95.7 The Game. Last one, Coletta, before we get out. Let's be optimistic and say the Warriors get through the play-in game or games, and they go up against Utah or Phoenix. What kind of chance do you give them in a seven-game series, and do you give them more of a chance against one of those teams than the other?
I'd probably give them more of a chance against Utah. They just beat them 2 out of 3 times, and one of the times they beat them, Donovan Mitchell was in there. And so I understand they don't have their full crew right now, and Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley are going to come back. But they've built some confidence against Utah. Against Phoenix, they got blown out twice. Now we'll see what happens tonight. The Warriors have to be feeling good about themselves. The Warriors are a different team right now. The way they're playing defensively, they're a top-5 defensive team and all that right now. So I'd give the Warriors a much better chance to win tonight against Phoenix than I would have the last 2 times they played them. But against Utah, listen, I think what they've done in the regular season does go a long way for their confidence, and Utah is still going to be favored, obviously. But no one wants to see the Warriors, and especially not Utah. Utah knows exactly what the Warriors are capable of. They threw everything they could at Steph Curry to keep him from knocking down threes, and they did an amazing job, and he still has the game he had, yeah, scoring the ball, and then kills them with the game winner there. And it's frustrating for them, I think. So, listen, Snyder's a great coach, and if that's the matchup, he's going to bring his A-game strategy and the defensive game plan, and Royce O'Neal and Mike Conley will probably be chasing Steph around all over the place, and the double teams and really smart double teams with double team comes, and then as soon as Steph kills his dribble, the second defender runs out of there so they can recover and rotate like they want to. But the Warriors did beat him twice. And so the Warriors know they're capable of putting a game together or a couple games together, or a few games together to beat this Utah team. So I just think the confidence level is really high for the Warriors, and I think that's who the Warriors would probably want to see given how the season has gone.
Colin Azubuike, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And continue to do your thing on NBC Sports Bay Area with Fitz.
Yes, sir. Thanks, guys, for having me. Take care.
Yes, sir. That's Colin Azubuike, a member of the 2007 We Believe team. Now you can hear him. NBC Sports Area, Bay Area with Fitz. Tip off tonight at 7 on 95.7 The Game also. And on NBC Sports Bay Area, and 5:30 with Warriors Live with J.D. Covey and Barnett right here on 95.7 The Game. When we come back, what do the Toronto Raptors have to do with the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry? Dan Dibley's going to tell you that on the other side, and it's all brought to you by Outdoor Supply Hardware. Get into the spring of things at Outdoor Supply Hardware. Save on perennials, herbs, vegetables, and more through May 16th, plus save 10% on all in-stock wind chimes and handmade Talavera pottery. Find the store nearest you at osh.com.
You're listening to Stymie, Guru, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, coming up at 1:20, we've got Guru's Lock of the Day, as always, at 1:20. And then about 1:25, 1:30, I'm going to talk some A's. There's a stadium update through MLB. Fairly significant, and we'll pass that along to you regarding the A's future in Oakland. We'll talk about that at about 1:30. In the meantime, I'm on the call. We're on the pull back the curtain. We're on the call this morning talking about, you know, the show and stuff, and we're talking about Steph Curry, and Dibley said he had some great numbers about Curry. But it has something to do with the Raptors? Is Kyle Lowry or the Toronto Raptors? What do the Raptors have to do with this, Dibs?
The Raptors have nothing to do with this, which is why when you teased it, I was flummoxed. I was baffled. I was bamboozled. I was led astray. And I had to ask the boys behind the glass as I pull the curtain away from the curtain that's being pulled away. And I said, what the hell is he talking about? And Kyle, who's brilliant, said, it's play on word for your Raptor stat. I said, okay. All right, I'm ready to come back now.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about the Raptors or Raptor?
I guess it's Raptor. I was going to just take one on the chin in the interest of making a fool out of myself.
And I appreciate that.
I was going to go Roxy Dibs and say, please explain.
Nice. Yeah, that's please one explain. Of my favorite bits. And the Olympics coming up in about 9 weeks, from which that's derived. It's an acronym, and it stands for Robust Algorithm Using Player Tracking and On-Off Ratings. It's a lot of words to say. It's a good tool to measure just how good a player is offensively and defensively. And when you look at this number, this Raptor number, you see that Steph Curry is, according to the numbers, the third best player in the association this season. He's having the third best year. And the reason why I went to this number, guys, is because I was watching Rudy Gobert, and Steiny, you mentioned yesterday about his MVP candidacy and why isn't there one? And it's right. In part because of his Raptor number. Offensively, he is a non-factor to the degree that he cannot be, in my opinion, the MVP.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Is that because he's just too limited offensively?
Yeah, and I think when you look at, like, the leader in Raptor, the number is Nikolai Jokic. Okay. He's having statistically the best year. He's a plus 9.6. Now, if you add in the WAR to it, which is wins over replacement, wins over the average player in the league, Jokic is still number one, and he goes up significantly. And that's where Steph Curry is third in our league in WAR. But just in the raw Raptor number, quote-unquote, here are the names in order. Okay. And tell me what you think of the seasons. It's Jokic is one, Embiid is two, then Kawhi Leonard is three, Mike Conley is fourth, and then it's Rudy Gobert, Jimmy Butler, and Steph Curry and Paul George are tied for seventh.
And that's WAR.
That's just the overall Raptor. Right. Now, if you do it by WAR, because then it takes into account how many games you actually played, then Steph Curry jumps to third when when you add in that factor. It goes Jokic, Gobert, and Curry. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with Jokic 1 and Embiid 2 if that's the stat where you're taking into consideration, you know, Embiid, just the games played. Because Embiid's very valuable, obviously, when he plays. That's interesting, Goo.
And if I'm Conley, I'm somewhere. Oh, I love Raptor. Give me more. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I like Conley. I know he's a good player, Dibs, but it's almost like what's elevating him, you know, where we say all stats are too much, you know. What's pushing him up to that level to where he's that high on that list, you think? To where
I was looking at the same thing.
He's not that player. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Just in defensive overall Raptor, he's a 4.1, which puts him eighth best in the league. Draymond Green, by the way, is 10th in defensive Raptor, which is, again, kind of a weird stat to quantify, but it's a good measurement. Draymond Green is a 3.5 defensively. He's a solid 1.0 offensively.
Wow. I mean, Conley's a nice... I think Conley's an above-average defender. And the one thing we really haven't gotten into was if they play Utah,
he's okay.
Listen, nobody shuts Curry down. But Conley can make him work in a different kind of way than Royce O'Neal. I like Conley. He gets paid a ton. But Utah cannot win it if Mike Conley is not healthy and playing. Let's put it that way. And some people don't think they can win it even if he is.
And let me just give some kudos out to Utah team defensively. Even though Curry, we love you, had 36 points, he was 3 of 13 from 3. And from my vantage point, fellas, It was because Utah made it difficult. Curry's no toy. He's not a machine. It feels like it. But I looked at that Utah team like, yeah, you took the L. You were without Conley, who has some, you know, success against Steph. So you add that with O'Neal, Steiny, and Dibbs. If I'm Utah and Quinn Snyder, I like that because, to me, they made it difficult on Curry from outside the three-point, outside the arc last night. No doubt. Yeah.
Royce O'Neal, by the way, 53rd in overall defensive Raptor. So, and then if you look, Favors is in there. I know he hasn't played a ton. And then George Niang is right in there. All four of those guys are in the top 65 in our league. So you start to get a picture of defensively, and obviously Rudy Gobert is number one in, and it's not even close. He's an 8. Next up is Clint Capella at a 5.1. So you've got really good defenders with the league's elite interior defender, and you can see where things can be difficult. But then there's the Steph factor. You know, all he needs is a half a step and a third of a shoulder, and he can get that three ball up. And if he gets it off, it's going in.
Dibs, real quick, if you don't mind, where's Jimmy Butler on the list like that? Jimmy Butler.
Just a defensive standpoint, he is 18th, and the fascinating thing about Jimmy Butler is he's about the same spot offensively. He's one of the real rare two-way guys, but 18th in defense, and he's 6th overall.
Well, how far does the list go down real quick, Dibs? Does it go?
Oh, like, you can do it. It's
where's
every
Wiggins
player
on both those, for example, because there's you know, because Butler's considered a good two-way player, and that's what Wiggins strives to be or is getting. And Butler's 18 both. Do we know where Wiggins falls?
Yeah, let me just scroll down as we...
Hopefully not too far.
Yeah.
Do we have any scrolling music? Do we have any music we can scroll to?
He ain't in the top 20. Right? Yeah. I can get
sounds
to
like
you that.
Sounds like we're down to 25 now.
Dibs is scrolling using the down arrow.
Oh, no!
It's like the price
is your
right,
radio show. K-Wing ratings
the big right wheel.
Here. More. Yeah. JTA, I must have gone by
K-Wing ratings. Yeah, whoa.
Wearing glasses, but can't see.
Come on, Diz.
Boy.
Take a shower here before he finds it. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't like this one. Yeah,
there you go. Rick Barry.
Right, yeah.
Dibs right, can keep sort. Looking at that. But speaking of defense. speaking of defense, you guys catch this little exchange between Anthony Slater, who does some insider work for 95.7 The Game, and Draymond. I think this includes the question. Does it include the question? Otherwise, I'll set it up. He basically just said to Draymond, "So, do you think you're defensive player of the year?" Take a listen.
Who do you think should be defensive player of the year?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
So that means it's you?
All right. If you know basketball, I think you think it's me.
I think he said, if you know basketball, then you think it's me. So Draymond not taking the bait, but kind of taking the bait. And so it got me to thinking defensive player of the year, right? Or all defensive team. And it just so happens today, the NBA.com, Steve Ashburner, who's been around forever, has his top list of defensive player of the years. And you want me to go down the list?
I'm excited.
All
hold
right.
Hold on. Let me tell you first that Andrew Wiggins is 140th overall in Raptor. 140th.
Then that list is whack. Yeah. Right.
Well,
wow,
you know why? It's because when it comes to offense, I'm a negative 1.3. I get mine sometimes.
That's what it is.
Lately, I've been bringing the noise, but defensively, he's a plus 0.3, so he is a plus defender. But
man,
offensively, baby.
I know we've criticized him this year, but that's
not of late.
Harsh.
He's not a fan of the Raptor. Yeah, let's just say that if he got those new numbers.
Steiny, let me hear your defensive, your DPOY candidates, and I'll tell you where they rank in their Raptor.
Nice.
Okay. Well, I'm going to work off Ashburner's list because I'm sure he's got a vote, and you know, he also represents a lot of what the media is thinking. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey station, and this segment's brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. All right, here we go, Steve.